People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing.
But the net zero madness is closing down factories, is closing down industry on a scale we couldn't have even believed today.
My administration has taken action to abolish all discriminatory diversity, equity, and inclusion nonsense.
Never mind the planet.
Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Never Mind the Planet. And we're joined again by Ebenezer and Shay. Ebenezer, Shay, how are you doing? Anything you want to update us on since we last spoke, which was a few weeks ago? Anything interesting happened that you want to talk about?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. And yeah, lovely to be back with another episode of Never Mind the Planet. I think it's been a roller coaster of a period geopolitically, I think, since we last spoke. Lots of things have happened. Escalators have stopped on people. There have been all sorts of issues all around the world. Personally, I've been doing quite a significant amount of traveling, which of course sounds very, very pleasurable, unless of course you hear me say that it's been for work purposes, which means that I've had very little downtime and more time spent across the screen. But yeah, all in all, we're grateful. We thank God for another day and another episode.
Yeah, busy, lots going on. And I noticed you dropped in the mentioning of escalators stopping, which is maybe a sort of hint towards our first topic, which we'll get onto in a moment. Before we do that, Shay, anything been going on in your world in the last few weeks since the last episode, or has it been a quiet time?
Well, quiet. That would be a gift at this point. But yeah, it's been a blissful time. On a personal note, I became a dad about 3 weeks ago to my beautiful girl. And yeah, on the work side, we've been writing bids, we've been writing articles, and basically at work really. That's all been seemingly good, but yeah, it's been a not quiet time, but it's been a blissful time. Yeah.
Well, congratulations, very many congratulations to you and your wife and your young family. It's great to hear. And I'm sure it's been anything but quiet. Yes. But yeah. Here we are. So hopefully we'll you can stay with us for the duration, Shay, without sort of falling asleep or having to go and tend to your duties. So grateful to you for joining us on this episode. So yeah, I mean, okay, well, I guess maybe we'll get on to what's been happening in the whole world of sustainability and talking about what the implications are for businesses. There's always lots been going on in the world, and maybe a few things in particular worth talking about today. Always difficult to kind of prioritize and work out which topics we're going to focus on, but I think there's a couple, Shay, that and I think in particular one from somebody who keeps on being the source of our news these days, but and sort of the hint around escalators earlier on might have given you a clue. So, Shay, what should we be talking about today?
Yeah, I mean, as Ebenezer said earlier, there's a lot going on geopolitically, but we have two loaded topics to discuss, two news highlights that will get us going. So, as you said, Simon, there is this very popular person that's been a source of news for us. Recently, Donald Trump, the president of the United States at the United Nations, called climate change the greatest con job. And this actually comes off the back of pulling out of the Paris Agreement as well in the second administration, as it did in the first. So question would then be, what does this say about the political backlash against sustainability and sustainable businesses and the risk it poses for businesses and global climate change action? And then secondly, there is a growing normalization, as we've been seeing recently, of my anti-migrant and xenophobic rhetoric from US voices and also UK parties who are recently chasing reform on immigration. And then the question would then be for us to discuss, how is this shift in discourse shaping policy, business, and society? So as you can see there, two very loaded topics, much to discuss, much to delve into. So I hand over the floor back to you, Simon and Ebenezer.
Yeah, wow. Thanks, Shay, for throwing two big, weighty topics at us again for us to talk about and unpick. Never a dull moment, really, is there? When Trump was at the UN conference, I think it was just last week, and called climate change a con job, what a thing to say. And but obviously shouldn't necessarily surprise us. You know, amazing looking at the faces of people in the audience in terms of how they reacted to us. As I said, it shouldn't be necessarily something that surprises us. If we think about the Sustainable Development Goals, the UN Sustainable Development Goals, or the SDGs, I think it was not so long ago, thinking around March, when the US under Trump stated it rejected and denounced the UN SDGs. where does this leave us? Ebenezer, I'm thinking about, particularly for businesses, you have, obviously, in recent times, businesses being encouraged to, be more responsible, develop ESG policies, to report, and to, to take action. Never mind just on climate change, but across the whole spectrum of ESG topics. And then the next moment, you see the President of the United States, saying that climate change is a con job, having previously rejected and denounced the SDGs. What do businesses do? I mean, are they sort of supposed to think, okay, so none of this actually matters? I'm sort of going to go at this half-heartedly, knowing that it's just going to be dropped. It's no longer relevant. Maybe we shouldn't sort of even be doing the mandatory reporting properly, because, if the leader of the United States of America says it's a con job, and SDGs should be boycotted, then why should my business do anything at all? Ebenezer.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. I think it puts us all in a right old mess, doesn't it? Because when you've got the President of the United States, leader of the biggest economy in the world, the biggest polluter in the world, both in current terms, and of course one of the biggest polluters in historic terms in the world, if not the biggest, saying that climate change is a hoax and it's a con job, it creates a lot of confusion, not least because it's completely an utterly bizarre statement to make, because we can all see the evidence of climate change around us, even in places like America, where seasonal weather events are getting more and more extreme. And it's shocking, frankly, that a person in his position, with his access to intelligence and knowledge and all that can be made available to him to help him to understand and to see the facts, can't come to the conclusion that any child across the world can come to, which is that climate change is actually a real thing. So that makes you think, of course, and to see that this is political. It's not about the facts. It's not about science. It's not about doing what is required in order to address the many challenges that we face around an ever warming climate and a changing world from an ecological point of view. It's rather about throwing red meat to the base. And that's what the entire speech was, unfortunately. I mean, the founding fathers of the United States must really literally be rolling around in their graves, you know, listening to that speech from a sitting American president to the entire world, not just on the bits, you know, about climate change, but also the anti-immigrant rhetoric, which we'll come to talk about later. I mean, deeply, deeply, deeply shocking. So for businesses that are listening to that, it's confusing, frankly, because at the same time, they're being given this message that, look, we've got to get our act together. We've got to move towards more sustainable practices, and we've got to do it urgently. And then on the other hand, they hear what Trump says, which is that, look, this whole thing is just rubbish. It's hogwash. Just carry on, business as normal. Drill, baby, drill. No need to focus on renewables. Windmills kill birds. They are the worst thing in the world. Forget about renewable energy. Forget about solar. Let's use more fossil fuels and call it a day. So it really causes a situation where I think a lot of people are asking themselves, well, you know, where is the ray of hope in all of this? And I guess the good thing, really, from us sitting here from a UK perspective, is that we have a government that does not take that view. The other ray of hope is that, of course, we have a situation here in the UK where we've actually legislated into law the need for us to reach net zero by 2050. And so long as that legislation remains, and so long as that legal commitment is maintained, then it means that we, the people in the UK, can hold the government to account, as many have done on a number of occasions, where we feel that they're not moving the needle faster enough towards us getting to net zero by 2050. And so I think, of course, there is a lot of confusion, and businesses naturally would be tearing their hairs out of their heads, trying to figure out, well, what do I do now? But the good thing is, of course, that in the UK, we've got a different set of circumstances. Our government doesn't share this view. I think we've got to focus on what we need to be doing as a community, as a society, as a country, to move forward and to take advantage of the full benefits that lie ahead in transitioning to a fully green economy. Of course, there are things that will continue to happen over the next 3 years in Trump land, but I think the best thing that businesses in the UK can do for themselves is to see that as an isolated arena, not to focus too much on that and say, well, I'm not going to move ahead with my sustainability plans because Trump has this view. Because, of course, doing that means you will, as a business, be left behind because, you know, the UK is moving in a completely, totally different direction. So, yeah, geopolitically, it's a bit of a dog's dinner, really, isn't it, in terms of when you listen to what Trump is saying and the impact that it has. But focusing more locally here in the UK, I think we've got a different set of circumstances, and perhaps the message to businesses should be, let's think about us here in the UK and what we're doing, and think about the lengths to which we need to go in order to transition to that green economy, and think of America and Trump land as you know, an isolated situation where things could change rapidly, right? You know, come next election cycle, you could have a Democrat in the White House, and they could flip and reverse this entirely.
Yeah, well, I mean, really interesting points there. And actually, I'd, I just wanted to sort of pick up on one thing you said there about the UK heading in a completely different direction, because some might argue that actually we're not. And this might be in the back of people's minds as they're kind of thinking about, you know, their business and future governments and policy direction. And of course, we only need to look at the state of our own politics in the UK, and forgive me to our listeners for just talking about it in the UK context again, but I think it's an important point that you see, of course, Reform UK, the Reform Party leading in the polls, and the ever more mainstream parties seemingly collapsing. We've got the Labour Party conference going on as we speak, they're sort of struggling to get their voice heard. They're losing voters to Reform, also the Liberal Democrats as well, which does give us some hope, I guess. But there's that question mark in terms of what's going to happen in the UK. Are we seeing, as we see in other parts of Europe, the rise of far right parties? What might happen if at the next general election we do have a Reform government who have openly said they reject net zero policies? Of course, we talked about this back in our first podcast again. So it's obviously this is an issue that's not going away. Isn't that playing on the back of people's minds? Isn't that playing on the minds of businesses? We're kind of thinking about what do we do in the future, that actually this whole topic around climate change and net zero is fading away. It's becoming less important. You and I might not think it is. But it may be in the back of businesses' minds, which is, perhaps preventing action being taken. So I don't know, Shay, what's your thoughts here?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think this, it's quite a big shame, really, because as it's creating confusion, it could also embolden businesses that are reluctant to take action, not to actually take action. And the ones that are just starting out, SMEs, they might feel, we don't really need to do anything. And momentum is on the Reform side. And let's say they take power in the next couple of years, we wouldn't really need to do anything. The same thing in the US. In the first administration of Trump, the Paris Agreement and climate change and sustainability took the back bench, and then Democrats took back power and things were reinstated, and then now we have Trump again in power and all those have been repealed. So all these are causing instability, all these changes in policies and so on and so forth around the world, causing instability, causing us not to make the progress that we want to make. But I would say this, if there was a remote chance that climate change is real, and it is, in fact, the chances are more than remote, and if there's an idea that it could be real, even if there was a 1% chance of it, action is demanded on this basis alone, given that inaction can really be detrimental to current and future generations. For businesses, it could mean the loss of raw materials. It could be a cause of different environmental and social hazards, which could prevent businesses from operating properly. So there's even if there was 1% chance of it, it needs action. It demands action, and there is more than 1% chance of it. So it even needs more action, and that would be where I wrap up my own contribution is that businesses need to look at the facts that climate change indeed is real. And action is needed, and action should be continued for us to make an impact, for us to secure the current generation, but more importantly, the future generations. Thank you.
Yeah. So, effectively, even if there's, there's declining political will, which you could say there is, then it shouldn't necessarily stop us from acting. Even if, there was a low chance that climate change was real, and it maybe it was a con job, there's still a huge amount of benefit for us in actually taking action by switching away from fossil fuels to renewables. You know, we quite often sort of talk about sustainability or ESG in terms of, I guess, what we might sort of talk about in terms of the moral imperative of acting, which I guess sort of when you sort of look at it from a business perspective is always or perhaps sometimes difficult to reconcile with the bottom line. Doing something above and beyond what you're usually doing because you kind of feel it's the right thing to do. You want to act in a way which is ethical, morally right. Yeah, we should be doing it, but not all businesses think that way. A lot of businesses are looking, first and foremost, looking after the bottom line. So, if something is, perhaps optional, or there's a bit of doubt in terms of whether this is going to be, required of us in the future, the tendency might just be to say, well, let's not bother. But actually, if you kind of think about in terms of the opportunities that it brings in the sense of things like business resilience, looking at the kind of risks that lie ahead, whether it be sort of physical risks, as it's often termed, whether it's increased flooding or droughts, which you don't sort of have to have a PhD to sort of see, this sort of stuff's happening right now. This isn't stuff that you kind of look in a crystal ball and think, oh, this might happen in the future if this climate change stuff came to light. It's happening right now. So there's that kind of stuff that you can mitigate against. Also, just looking at the opportunity for saving costs. If you can generate your own electricity and become less reliant on the grid, the energy providers and maybe the fossil fuel companies might not like that so much because you're not paying them, but you'll like it if it's actually reducing your costs as well. So thinking about it in terms of in those terms, the opportunities to become more successful, more resilient businesses, to save costs, to become more profitable, also reputational opportunities as well. The opportunity to win more customers because of the stance that you take, maybe leading where others aren't or where the politicians aren't during a sort of period of time like we're in now. There's an opportunity there too. So there's just those are just a few examples, but I think looking at it in those terms, I think it should hopefully help businesses to not take their eye off actually what we should be doing. I don't know what everyone thinks of Trump, and there may be people who like Trump listening, and there are many. We don't want to disrespect them, but I guess what we're saying is that perhaps we shouldn't listen to everything Donald Trump says, and some may say we shouldn't listen to anything he says. But anyway, I will move swiftly on, to the next topic, which is sort of closely linked, because again it's sort of heavily influenced from our friend in the United States, which is looking at this sort of, I guess, what you could call increasing rhetoric or sentiment, which to an extent is normalizing xenophobia, anti-migrant rhetoric, and we suddenly sort of feel that where once maybe not so recently, talking in language and saying things which might be perceived as racist is suddenly not necessarily so. And I guess sort of under the banner of freedom of speech, I guess these more controversial views are being given a platform, are being given a voice. And I guess what are we looking to talk about here? I guess what does this mean for business? Because again, if you go back to the States, and sorry, we have to go back to the United States again, where you see Trump talking about DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, as something which is bad, something which should be banned, We shouldn't be providing inclusive workplaces. We shouldn't be encouraging equality within our places of work. Again, it's a bit like that whole business of saying that climate change is a con job. How are we supposed to respond to that? You know, we spent so many years developing, you know, diversity policies. We've spent so many years, you know, training and encouraging our workforce to be inclusive, you know, ensure that we are respecting one another as human beings, that we're giving everyone sort of, you know, equal chance to succeed, and giving people those opportunities that might not otherwise have had them. And now suddenly we kind of find there's a sort of tide of rhetoric, of speeches, talking about, you know, I guess sort of anti-migrant, migrants as being a bad thing, and the whole thing about DEI being a bad thing. How do we respond to that? Similar question as before, and I'm going to go to you again, Ebenezer. How do we respond to it? You know, what's going on?
Yeah, Simon, I think it's a very dire situation. And I think it's really a battle, right, for the soul of the UK, and in many ways the soul of the US, the soul of the world, right? Who are we as a country? Who are we as a people? Are we the kind of people that stuff our noses up at those who do not look like us, those who were not born in the same place that we were, those who may not even speak our own language, but nevertheless come to us and come to where we live because they're in search of help and of need? Do we give them a chance? Do we give them an opportunity? Or are we, the kind of people that see ourselves in each other and see a common humanity? And I think that's the question for the UK, really. It's a question that will manifest itself in different forms, whether through the policies on immigration, whether through the policies on welfare, whether through, the way in which we go about discussing and having these debates. But that is very much, I feel, the question on the table for us as a country, and for the Western world as well. And that question will be answered, whether directly, because we provide an answer, whether through the ballot box or through debates in those circles where these discussions are had, or through our parliaments, or indirectly, because we're passive, we are apathetic, and we decide to stay away from the debate entirely, and we do not put the strongest voice forward in terms of what we believe and what we know to be true. So I think we are at an inflection point as a country. And in my own view, I think that the truth needs stronger voices. And by truth, I mean, you know, the factual situation. And the fact of the matter is that the UK benefits from immigration. The fact of the matter is that the UK has benefited from immigration for several years. And I'm not just talking about the last 50 years, I'm talking about the last 100 years, right? And also the fact of the matter is that without immigration, the UK would be an extremely different country. That is just a fact. Now, when we put these arguments out there, a lot of people say, well, it's not about saying that the UK doesn't want any immigration, but it's rather about controlling the immigration and keeping out illegal migrants. And that is what it's about. Well, let's test that and see. as to whether that is really the case. Because when you look at the proposals that Reform have put forward, their proposals are no longer about illegal migrants. And of course, let me put this out there clearly. As a country, we need to have rules. And if anybody breaks our rules and comes into the country illegally, then we have to address that. So absolutely, have rules. That is normal. Every country has done that, and every country has done that for hundreds of years, right? You know, every country has controlled its borders. Some have done it well, others have not. So if there are issues, we need to look at that. But that is an entirely separate argument to, you know, in a separate situation to what we're facing now. Because when you look at the reforms that Reform have put on the table in terms of what they're proposing, what they're saying is that not only are they going to look at illegal immigration, which of course they should, any government should do that, but what they're saying now is that they're going to target legal migrants like me, right? And what they're saying is that if you're a legal migrant and you're already on indefinite leave to remain in the UK, then what's going to happen is that they're going to remove that and they're going to force you to apply, right, or reapply for your status every 5 years, which is extremely and grossly unfair. And what it would mean is that it would strip people, thousands of people, of the rights that they have gained in the UK, having come here legally, followed all the rules, paid into the system, having been net contributors to the system as immigrants are. They're going to take all of that away. And I think that would be extremely unfair. I feel that the UK would suffer immensely because of that, because you would have a lot of very, very good people that we rely on in our public services leave the country. But you're going to have a situation where a lot of people don't come to the UK anymore from other countries to work, to study, etc. And that's going to have a detrimental impact on the economy of the UK, because, of course, the UK has an aging demographic problem. And that means that there is a ticking time bomb, if you like, where you've got a record number of people that are going to be eligible for pension payments, but you've got a very, very, very small number of working age people that demographically are available in the country to work to support, those pensioners. I think now it's fewer than one and a half persons, I think, supporting five pensioners or something of that nature. So I think, you know, this is a real problem. And I think, you know, we have to be strong in our voices to talk about the benefits of immigration, what the benefits that the UK has derived from immigrants over the years, and how immigration is a net contributor to the economy, but also at the same time to highlight the fact that, yes, of course, we've got to control our borders, but let's not go down this path of saying that, well, we're going to start going after legal migrants, because that is a different angle of the conversation. And it also shows the extent to which, look, you know, a lot of people don't like us using certain words like fascism, etc. But these sort of demonizing of immigrants, it's a very slippery slope. You find yourself talking about illegal immigrants in one instance, and then it can very, 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 very quickly shift to the targeting of legal migrants, which I think is completely uncalled for. So I think we need to counter this debate with truth and with facts, and the voices of truth have to be far stronger, because at the moment the agenda is being set by the likes of Reform, and you've got people in the camps of Labour and even the Conservatives who should be countering that narrative, but are rather trying to beat Reform at Reform's own game, which I think is a terrible and colossal mistake, because they're going to lose if they do that. And so I think we've got to bring a strong countering argument about the benefits of immigration to the UK.
Yeah, and there's a lot to unpack there. But I think, I guess the question is, yeah, how, what do businesses do? I mean, seeing what's happening out there, you know, we saw how many was it? It was 100,000 people marching on the streets of London, not so long ago, and Elon Musk coming out and giving his voice in support, and some who say that he was calling on violence to fight back, as I think you put it. How do businesses respond to this? What do they do? I mean, do we ignore it? Do we ignore it and, you know, hope it goes away and that we'll come to our senses? Or do we have to do more than that? And I'm thinking, I guess, in terms of, you know, firstly, you know, do businesses need to send a message to government, you know, current government and future governments, to say, you know, actually, you know, we need immigration. Immigration is a good thing. Yes, okay, there's a lot more we can do to control it better, but by actually, you know, demonizing all immigration in the way that we seem to be at the moment is only going to be counterproductive, and, you know, is going to end badly. So is there a message that businesses should be giving to government? But I'm also just thinking about internally, in terms of their own policies, should they, if they've sort of developed their own diversity and equality policies, continue to do so? And if they haven't, actually, should now be a sort of time to double down on that effort, rather than to kind of maybe not do so, thinking that, okay, it's losing sort of popularity, it's no longer relevant. And I guess sort of how do HR teams respond to this? You know, where you might sort of see, and I don't know to what extent it might already be happening, but if you see, you know, people on marches and shouting things which may be sort of seen to be discriminatory, finding its way into the workplace, in which case, you know, how does HR respond? And is there a risk maybe that they may end up, you know, being taken to court? I don't know. So a few sort of things maybe to sort of think about. And I'm going to go to Shay. What do you reckon, Shay?
Yeah, thank you, Simon. I think there has to be a strong coalition of businesses, you know, coming together and addressing this, because this can be quite detrimental to them. I'm talking about the anti-immigrant policies that are being pushed, or proposals that are being pushed. So, you know, let's go back to the US for about 1 second, because, you know, there's a lot to unpick from there. You know, just recently, I think it was about 7 days ago, the Trump administration instated about $100,000 fee for the H-1B visas. That's the work visas in the US. And they clarified that was for first-time applicants. But looking at data, Amazon, for example, between October 1st last year, 2024, and the start of the 2025 fiscal year, there were 10,000 H-1B applications that came from Amazon alone, 10,000. So looking at the new fees that they have to pay, which is 100,000, you can do the math that's a significant amount of money. But then Amazon is a $1 trillion business. That might not affect them as much as organizations like the NHS in the UK that needs a significant number of immigrants and legal immigrants in this case to work at the NHS to take care of all of us, all of us listening to this calls, to this podcast, or businesses, individuals and businesses, and so on and so forth. So we have sectors like the healthcare, education, IT, where immigrants, legal immigrants, again, in this case, you know, are contributing, you know, quite significantly. They pay their taxes, they add a lot of value. So for businesses, you know, they need to count the cost of this. We already see the impact of laws that have reduced and prevented EU students and international students from coming to the UK. We're already seeing schools or universities closing down or merging. We already see a lot of redundancies at universities, unemployment as well from staff at universities. We already see the impact of some of those, which, you know, is a subset of this anti-immigrant laws, you know, that we're seeing being implemented, and the rhetoric is gradually gaining a lot of pace. Adding to that, we see dwindling birth rates in the global north. We see increasing aging populations, and then anti-immigrant policies would likely contribute even more to labor shortages, reduce GDP, reduce consumption rates, and increase in labor costs for businesses. So I think businesses really need to look at this facts, form a coalition, discuss with government, and I think there's a lot of education that also needs to go into society itself, because you know, we have the reform in the UK, you know, gaining some ground, trying to conservative as well, labor as well, a lot of them trying to implement policies that their bases would be happy with, and their bases, you know, the base of this of these different parties, you know, are people, you know, people like you and I, you know, that might not have all these facts in hand. And I think, like Ebenezer said, the voice of truth and the voice of fact really needs to be stronger. And I think, you know, businesses would have a huge role to play in this. We are doing our part, I think, but you know, more needs to be done.
I think there's another podcast episode in, you know, how do we beat fake news? How do we fact check? Because there's so many dubious facts, well, not facts, misinformation out there, misleading information out there, which is being put out there, you know, obviously helping others to pursue their own agendas, that, you know, I don't know where do we get our sort of trusted news from within our social media age. But I think, you know, just one thing when you were sort of speaking there, Shay, just sort of, you know, how kind of all of these things are linked. We were talking about climate change just a moment ago. Now we're talking about immigration. And, you know, we could also talk about how sort of very recently we saw the US government and the UK governments and other governments cutting international development aid. And, you know, the fact that, you know, you've got parts of the world which are sort of particularly vulnerable to the impacts of climate change, have, you know, had their development budgets, or, you know, or any aid that they might have received cut, means to some extent that you might expect to see increased migration in the future, because of, you know, more people who are displaced, and they, you know, they can't get the help to be able to sort of counter some of those challenges. So where do they go? They go to the parts of the world where they sort of see perhaps they might be able to survive, you know, heading north into Europe, heading into the United States. It doesn't matter if you increase your controls to prevent immigration. We've seen the lengths that people go to get into to the UK, risking their lives. There's only so much you can do to stop it. And, you know, if you have more and more people flooding into our countries because we failed to actually help, you know, address some of the challenges in their own countries, then we've only got ourselves to blame. I don't know. Ebenezer, have you got a view on that?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. And I think you're absolutely right. And as a country, everybody who's listening needs to understand that we've got to get this absolutely right. Otherwise, the UK will suffer, not just socially, but economically as well. Shay was talking about some of the labor shortages and the impact on GDP. And that lays bare when you look at the economic data, and how much the UK is losing because of the immigration policies that we are currently adopting. Now, I think we need to start reframing this discussion slightly, because immigration, it invokes, and rightly so, a lot of emotional passions. And very often, what tends to happen is that politicians on the right and on the left tend to tap into those passions and take advantage of those passions and try to steer them to fit and or to suit their own selfish political objectives. So I think we need to start reframing the discussion. And so in doing that, in my view, I think the discussion is really not a question of whether the UK needs immigration or not. I think we have to start from a premise that yes, an understanding that yes, the UK does need immigration and does want immigration, as it has done for several years. I think the real question really is about the balance that we need to strike. And we've been moving from one extreme to the other over the last year. So in the Blair years, we went in the direction of one extreme, where the controls, as has been admitted, in many cases were not where they needed to be. And now we seem to be swinging in the opposite direction. So the question is, how do we maintain the center ground when it comes to immigration? And currently, we're not doing that because the policies are going in the other direction. We're going in the direction of reform, which is an extreme direction, having sort of pulled back from the extreme direction under the Blair years, specifically related to immigration from the EU. So we need to find a balance. And also, the final thing I'll say, Simon, is, it's worth remembering that during the Brexit campaign, we had the likes of Nigel Farage telling us that if we voted to leave the European Union, we could form closer ties with the Commonwealth countries. And that rather than having Polish, German, French, Spanish immigration, he argued, with which, and he argued that, look, we don't have a close connection with those countries. So instead of having immigration from those countries, Farage argued that we could build stronger ties with the Commonwealth, with India, with Ghana, Nigeria, with Zimbabwe, with South Africa, and we could have immigration from them instead, where, English is a common language, et cetera, et cetera. And here we are today, where all of that's been forgotten and gone out the window. So I think we need to reframe the discussion a bit.
Yeah, we lost you for a few seconds there, Ebenezer. But yeah, no, I think we got the gist of what you were saying. I mean, I'd like to kind of, I guess, sort of finish by bringing it again, sort of background to businesses. I mean, this is the Sustainable Business Alliance podcast. I think it'd be great if we could sort of, have something for businesses to take away from this in terms of, okay, we've heard the arguments, we agree with some of them, we might not agree with others. There's certainly a lot we've been talking about in terms of the political direction and as a country what we should be thinking about. But I guess sort of for businesses who are kind of maybe sort of struggling with this in terms of what they should be doing, what advice would you give to them? I'll go to you, Shay, first, and then I'll go back to you, Ebenezer. Shay, what if you had to give one piece of advice to businesses who are struggling here, what would it be?
Yeah, I would say, for a business or businesses struggling with this, I think the most important thing would be for them to again reason with the voice of truth, look at what the facts are, try to find avenues to talk to the MPs, to the contact in government, because these anti-immigrant policies, again, just looking at the fact, can be quite detrimental to businesses in the long term. I think legal immigration should be embraced as much as possible, again, given all the different facts that we have on the reduced birth rates, the increasing aging population, and the potential for labor shortages as a result of this anti-migrant policies. So I think if we don't address them, it could be quite detrimental to businesses and how they can access resources that they will need to run their businesses smoothly.
Yeah, so I think there's a message there. Businesses should speak up. They're obviously, really sort of influential when it comes to politics in this country. So, we should ensure that our current government and future governments are listening to what businesses are saying, and that businesses, if they're concerned about, some of the policies that are being talked about, that they should speak up and express those concerns. And Ebenezer, coming back to you, I was going to ask, I guess sort of maybe more from a sort of social policy perspective, maybe looking at it from the perspective of the HR director, who's maybe been sort of over the years, making sure that, people are trained and understand, what it means when we talk about, equality and diversity. They may be now sort of thinking, should we be toning down some of that work? Could there be a sort of external backlash from those who are sort of leaning to the right, sort of thinking that diversity, equity, and inclusion policies are wrong? And if they see a business that's kind of, talking openly about it, they sort of, might take a dim view, in the way that we've seen some businesses in the States withdrawing their DEI policies, maybe to an extent because they have to, but to another extent because there's a reputational issue here. What should businesses be doing? Should they be continuing, or should they be maybe a little bit more cautious?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. I think businesses should certainly be continuing. I think businesses should realize the benefits of diversity, equality, and inclusion, not just for the social environment of the businesses. Obviously, having diversity means you have a more enriched workforce, people from different backgrounds with different experiences that blend together very, very well, enriches the workplace, but it's also good for your bottom line, right? Having different people with different experiences, different ideas from those different experiences that can bring that value to your business is very, very, very important. And this is actually quantifiable in monetary terms. And it's very, very, very observable within commercial circles that businesses that have a diverse workforce always often do better that business than businesses that do not. And that has been an established trend for several years now. So I think businesses should continue on the path of progress that they are on, realizing that diversity is a strength. And if they want their commercial operations to be strong and to progress in that strength into the future, then it means you've got to keep that diversity that you've got as a strength, and you've got to allow it to propel you all throughout history, whether it's commercial organizations, more socially focused organizations, or even nations, right? Diversity has always proved to be the strength of great institutions. And it will be a shame for businesses to lose that. So my final advice to businesses is carry on with diversity, because that's where your strength is, and you're going to miss out on a lot if you let go of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, well, there's another question maybe for another episode about, you know, to what extent we should be, you know, giving a platform to those who maybe have a slightly different view, or maybe not even a slightly different view, a very different view, maybe more right leaning, you could say. You know, we talk about sort of cancel culture. You know, if we have sort of, you know, clubs or societies, whether it be in our sort of universities or within our own businesses, you know, to what extent, you know, should we be allowing that in, you know, in the spirit of freedom of speech, in the spirit of diversity and inclusivity? And you know, I guess sort of how do we ensure that that doesn't become sort of something a bit more sort of, you know, dangerous in terms of promoting, you know, I guess sort of, you know, maybe extremist views or views which could be considered, you know, racist or discriminatory. And I guess this to an extent where the law might come in, and actually, you know, where you have something which can be clearly defined as racist language, and therefore, you know, against the law, then, you know, how can the law help us to kind of determine, you know, where the line is, I guess, because we don't want to cross that line. But I don't know if you wanted to, any either of you wanted to reflect on that. You know, we're at the point now where we should probably be wrapping up, but perhaps another topic for a future episode. But I'm just going to sort of go to you both quickly to kind of see whether you had any sort of final remarks before we bring this to a close. Jay?
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, I'll just say balance. Balance is the key here. I think balance is the key word to take away in all these discussions, and the voice of reason. Having balance in at the back of our minds will be the way forward, especially when it comes to businesses, when it comes to governments, on all this migrant policies and climate change policies as well, climate related policies. So yeah, that's the final take from me.
Final word from you, Ebenezer.
Yeah, final word for me is that it's dire, but there are rays of hope out there, and we need to press on and continue as well, and even be more determined to redouble our efforts and be guided by the light of truth, because that's what's going to get us to where we need to go.
Like it. It's dire, but there's hope. There are rays of hope that we can look towards, and certainly we will hope to give you more reasons to be hopeful and optimistic in future episodes. Thank you very much, Ebenezer. Thank you very much, Shay. Thank you very much to everyone who's listened. Do send us your comments and questions if you have any, and you'd like to have those answered in the next episode of Never Mind the Planet. But for now, it's bye for now.